Hello and welcome to the Amber Spycast, your one-stop shop for all things His Dark Materials. Your Dark Materialists are back reading again. We're reading books, actual written word again, and it feels so good. Paper. Joanna, can you kick us off and read us one of those beautiful summaries again?
Oh, I am so excited to do that, Alaric. So, at the opening of the Amber Spyglass, we find that Mrs. Coulter is keeping Lyra in a cave in the Himalayas of Lyra's own world. Pretending to be a holy woman, Mrs. Coulter relies on the help of a little servant girl named Amma to bring her food and other necessities. Amma tells Mrs. Coulter that while they are happy to have a holy woman in their care, the villagers are frightened of her rumored companion, who they fear is dangerous and powerful. Mrs. Coulter shows Amma that her sleeping companion is simply her young daughter, Lyra. After Amma leaves, Mrs. Coulter feeds Lyra a sleeping potion to keep her unconscious, during which she dreams she is speaking to Roger. Back in the world of Chigaze, Will and two angels, Bathymos and Baruk, argue over what to do. They insist that Will come with them to Lord Asriel, but Will says he has to find Lyra first. Baruk agrees to fly ahead to look for her, and Will and Bathymos make their way down the mountain. While practicing with the subtle knife, Will learns that each world has a different feel to it, and he is able to accurately open portals to his world, Lyra's Oxford, and the world of Chigaze. Baruk returns, having discovered where Mrs. Coulter is hiding. As they make their way towards Lyra, Metatron, the Lord Regent of God's Angels, attacks Will, Baruk, and Bathymos. There is a brief struggle, but they are able to escape. Afterwards, Bathymos tells Will that angels are made out of dust. He also tells Will that God was not the creator of the universe, but was rather one of the first angels. When he gained power, he started telling the other angels that he had created everything. Another angel eventually found out the truth, so God banished her and all the angels that followed her. God is old now, and Metatron rules in his place. The trio agrees to part ways. Baruk decides to go to Lord Asriel alone and talk to him, while Bathymos agrees to pretend to be Will's demon and to help Will find Lyra.
So Travis.
Oh, so Travis.
I was waiting politely for you to throw it over to me, but yeah, it's all good.
Okay, listen.
I guess we're rusty.
I know, it's the first time I had to read a summary in a really long time, and then I was trying to close out my window, and I was distracted. So Travis.
Yes.
What was your take?
Lot of awesome exposition, like good exposition. Mm-hmm. It was done, and you know, it was catching us up to where we've been, and telling us a lot of new information, but not exposition bombs. Really nicely woven into the scenes. I was a big fan of these two chapters.
You know, one thing you miss when you're watching the show or watching the movie, it's lovely to see the world that someone else has sort of, you know, designed from the way they see the words and the way they've read the material. But right off the bat, the first two paragraphs are exactly what I've been missing, mm-hmm. which is that Philip Pullman prose. It's so rich and so descriptive, this descriptive passage about where this cave is. I was like immediately sucked back into this world.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. so amazing. And a weird thing is I'm still picturing a little bit of Nicole Kidman. It's like I can't get her out of my head.
Same.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, me too. You too. I was a little rusty. I'll be honest. I must be very lazy because it was like being spoon-fed by the TV show was kind of like, oh yeah, kind of like sit back. And just kinda, yeah. And this took some work. But such good work. It was good work. It took me a minute, but then I was really interested. One of the things I'm excited to talk about is this idea of like where Mrs. Coulter is and who she says she is and those kind of things. Like, I find that really interesting, and I wanted to just talk a bit about it with you. But yeah, it was beautiful, and I missed it. I missed it. Mm-hmm. The written word is always more powerful for me.
Yeah, those first three pages were just beautiful. I mean, you just painted a picture of this idyllic setting where the cave sets. It was amazing. I was really, really impressed.
I mean, how many times do you get to read the word rhododendrons?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Between different worlds, too. Rhododendrons are, like, everywhere.
Mm-hmm. You must like those.
Invasive species. Oh,
yeah. Invasive species.
So here she is. This struck me a little bit, and this is where I was a little bit off. I was off my balance, is Mrs. Coulter took Lyra back to this world at some point between where we left off at the encampment and now. So she was able to pass through worlds in some way and get to this place seemingly alone. And now she's in hiding. She's hiding Lyra. So what has she had a turn of heart? What is she doing? And why does she feel the need to keep Lyra incapacitated?
Yeah, who is she hiding her from, and why is she, incapacitated? Why is she drugged and kept in this, realm between living and death?
Where Lyra's getting there's a lot of things happening to Lyra in this sleep.
Yeah.
She's seeing something for the first time, mm-hmm. which we have not even heard spoke of yet, but mm-hmm. we hear about in these two chapters, which is the land, essentially the land of the dead.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And Roger.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Roger's there and aware.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's pretty obvious to me why she's has a sleeping potion or draft for Lyra.
Because she's Lyra. Because
if Lyra was awake, she'd be bolting. She'd be bolting the first time she could. Yeah. So I get that. I get that. But
you have to tie her up, and she'd be screaming like she would scream and yell and cause a ruckus the whole time.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like that's probably why. But why she's hiding, I'm not 100% sure. Is it because she lost control of Bolvanger and they escaped, and then Azriel did what he did, and so now she's just trying to like recoup and get a plan going?
But if that's the case, I would think that she wouldn't go back to her own world, because she was on the Chigaze world before, and now she's back in her own world, closer to the Magisterium.
And she had full control of the Spectres.
Right.
Uh-huh. She had just sent them to attack and wipe out the witches. She seemed to be, in some ways, all powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Why did she feel the need to retreat immediately once she gets Lyra?
Mm-hmm.
And then where is it? Where are all the soldiers and where are all these people that she was with?
Her whole, she's got this whole infrastructure that's now just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what she's playing at. I'm sure she'll reveal herself as the chapters progress.
She's certainly reliant on this village to mm-hmm. feed her a little bit. They even kind of led on that she's not really capable of making fire. She's running out of matches, right. And mm-hmm. she's like, oh, God, So now she's literally going to have to keep the fire going like 24/7 in order to keep fire going on because there's a chill at night. Sort of amusing to sort of think of Mrs. Coulter, who, as amazing of intellect as she is and how crafty she is, she's still, you mentioned here in the notes, Joanna, she's not glamping. This is like a hardcore. She is camping with a capital C. There's no like tents. There's no whatever. She's barely holding it together, and she's running out of supplies.
Yeah, but here's what I love, that she is still so Mrs. Coulter, because she refuses to talk to a man, and will only talk to that
little girl
named Amma. Yeah,
yeah.
I just, when I read it, I was like, "There's Marissa right there."
You know what knocked my socks off in this chapter?
What
was the translation technique?
Yes.
Demon whispering to monkey, and she could feel the meaning through them.
Yeah.
Loved that.
Yes.
I wonder if that's common on that world, or if that's like a skill Mrs. Coulter has picked up, because that's amazing.
That
has a lot of ramifications.
Yes. I did worry for that little demon as soon as it jumped in the monkey's hand.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can't help but be worried all the time.
It reminded me of like the TARDIS. Like how it automatically translates. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, not that this was a little bit also, I think, sort of emotion as well, just because of the nature of demons. But it did make me think about, like, if she was able to understand, obviously, if they're in the Himalayas, she's what, right. Nepalese, or I mean, she's something, you know, yeah. and does not speak that language. That was fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That was and she doesn't have a babelfish in her ear or a universal translator, you know.
Right.
This is the equivalent. And the way it was described in some ways, it wasn't like a literal translation. It was just an understanding.
She got the meaning. Yes. She didn't get the words. Mm-hmm. She just got what the girl's intent.
Yeah. That was great. That was really great. Her father needs sort of some proof as to what's going on. Amma seems to be just willing to continue to help. Mm-hmm. But the villagers are getting creeped out by why she's there and what the deal is. They believe, what is it that they think that she has in there?
An evil spirit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he needs sort of proof. And yeah. She's like, oh, it's no big deal. It's just my daughter. And she's sick or whatever. And mm-hmm. she's recovering. And you know, another reason why I guess you have to keep her drug is she'd be like, I'm not sick. You know, get me out of here. That's ultimately why she allows, you know, them to see Lyra.
Yeah.
I guess for the first time they've seen her.
And Mrs. Coulter was really giving me Bene Gesserit vibes in this scene.
Mm, yeah.
The whole missionary protectiva thing where they create mythology in order to give themselves cover and to get themselves aid when they go around. And setting herself up as a... As a wise woman, I thought was really neat.
Yeah, so she makes herself a holy person, and they're sort of mystified and not necessarily afraid of her, but just they keep their distance because they're not so sure about her. She's right. Different. She's very different. So this chapter was very short.
Yes.
Surprisingly short. In fact, it was so short, I was thinking, was this a chapter? And I was thinking I was going to ask you guys whether it was actually a chapter and not like a precursor, because the way that these chapters are framed, there's little bits of text.
Yes.
About what Lyra's perceiving, mm-hmm. her scenes, and it cuts off very sharply between chapters. Did you guys catch that?
I had a difficult time with it.
Me too. Well, I'm doing the
Kindle
version.
Same.
And so it's very much like, oh, wait. And it's hard to kind of go back and forth, yeah. Especially after you complete a chapter, you need to pick up where you left off on what Lyra's going through. Mm-hmm. And that was a little bit of an unusual technique.
Mm-hmm. Right. And see, for me, there's something wrong with the Kindle version. Every page is page 40 of 120. So,
really,
yeah. So, you know, scrolling through those pages had this kind of weird quality to it, you know? Yeah. Made it a little creepy.
I mean, it certainly feels more like a prologue mm-hmm. than it does a first chapter.
Yeah.
And it would have made some sense to have just had it been a prologue, mm-hmm. but I think it still works.
It's interesting, you know, between chapter one and two, there's a small scene with her and she's talking to Roger, and it ends with, and Lyra said, I'll.
And that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah. So I've been doing the Kindle of both reading and with the Audible audiobook. And with a whisper sync, again, that threw me off because I'm listening and I thought it just cut off. Mm-hmm. And Lyra said, I'll boom. And then chapter two, you know,
like, oh, they read it in a weird voice? Was it whispery or like, could you like, you know, it's in italics in the book. So it's clearly something
they did. It had like a slightly like, ethereal effect over it. Like, wispy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was okay. It was really well done.
Yeah. It was certainly a jarring stop. And I was like, you know,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. but, and then I had to go back when it picks up again. I had to go back and, you know, I had to go back and read it. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. Where did it end again?
Yeah. I couldn't keep my finger on it, but.
Have you guys read House of Leaves?
Have not.
No.
It's just a book where you have to like turn the book in order to read it. And it like jumps around and it's like, you know, go to page 72 and then you read something on that, like one word on page 72 and then go back to, it's very difficult to read. Not a good subway read. Cause you're like, you know, doing this all the time. It's not quite on that level, but it was a little bit jarring. In fact,
I feel like I would present that book.
If I was looking at the paper copy, I feel like it wouldn't be so jarring, just like you were saying, Travis. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I would just kind of fold, go back and look and kind of do the little, flip book, but it is weird because you're sort of swiping back and swiping back. It's not quite as comfortable. And,
I think because you're just assuming that there's a flaw, like some kind of glitch.
Yeah.
This has to be a mistake.
Yeah. So nice, clean, short chapter. And then we jump into what's happening with Lyra in her dream state. And she's in this realm. Roger's there. And they're speaking, although she's a little bit out of her element. She's not super sure what's going on. I was even thinking maybe it was like a flashback or a flash forward or something. This had me off my, again, I was sort of getting back into the reading game on these books and getting that language back into my head. But it's a dark, a unpleasant place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mentioned later in the second chapter, which we'll get to in a second. We find out a little bit more about this place and it kind of bums me out. It's sad. It's very sad what's happening. Yeah.
Let's get to it when we get to the later. So we
it's
can
teased here, but we get into more details. Yeah.
Right.
So Will, our guy, Will, he's here with our new angels, our angel friends,
Alphamous and Baruch.
And Baruch,
who in my head are Michael Penn and David Tennant. I'm sorry.
Oh my God, me too.
Yeah.
Oh sorry. God. I'm so sorry.
If they don't, I thought I scared cast you them, popped if up. They don't cast them, then that's a major flaw.
Oh my God.
It is exactly.
Michael Penn, Michael Sheen, and David Tennant.
So Michael Sheen should be Balthamos and Baruch should be Tennant, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because he's a little saucy.
Yep.
And he's curt with him. I also like that. Are you there? He's like, yeah, I'm always here.
Yeah.
Are you still there? Yes, obviously.
Yes, I'm here.
I'm always right here.
I love that at one point he's like, he replied tartly. I was like, oh man, that's the best.
It really is.
They have to be, they 100% have to be British. I mean, there's so much about them, I really appreciated how they were told. But just, again, just the way that they interact and what they look like and what they feel like and what he learns about them so early on. And the one thing that really stood out to me was that Balthamos says that humans are stronger than them. They are of flesh.
They're real flesh, I think is what he said.
And you think of these angels as the powerful creatures. Mm-hmm. But that was sort of something that really stood out to me and stood out to Will as well.
True flesh, excuse me.
True flesh, right. Mm-hmm. But the way that they're ever present, the way that they're barely visible, and when they're most visible, like at twilight or dawn or in the firelight, I think is when he was able to really see them. This is something that sort of your mind kind of races about how this could be accomplished. Mm-hmm. On screen, because we're coming off of the show, and how are they going to be able to do this? I wonder how they're going to pull that off, but it has to be just right. Like at times, you cannot see them.
Right.
It's just a voice.
Right.
It's not even a shimmer. It's nothing.
Yep.
So Balthamos is basically staying with Will here, while Baruch is going off to map out where they need to go, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a very intense connection, the two of them. They always know where each other is. What did you think about their relationship and what we know so little about them? But what did you think about Baruch and Balthamos at this point, what they mean and what they are?
I was a little confused. Not confused isn't the word, but I had a question as to whether or not the love that they felt for each other, which was obvious, was universal among angels, or if it was between those two. I had two backstories for them in my head. I mean, if it was between angels, fine, wonderful. But if it was just the two of them, I had this whole theory that Balthamos had been like a guardian angel for Baruch and helped him become an angel because so few people get to become angels.
Mm-hmm.
Their connection was just so deep.
And Baruch was younger, yes? Like,
yes.
Significantly younger.
Yeah, he was only 4,000 years old.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And Balthamus was quite a bit older.
Yeah. Interesting question, though, about back to the true flesh issue. Will's response to that question, you know, then are you stronger than human beings or weaker? Weaker, we have the true flesh. And then Will says, no, if I'm stronger, you have to obey me. You know, that whole might makes right thing, still an issue with Will that, you know, I'm hoping by the end of this book he gets past. Because it's not an endearing trait. But, I get where he came upon that philosophy. But it's not a good trait.
Well, I mean, in fairness to Will, his like best friend just had gotten kidnapped. All the witches that he was with were slaughtered, and these father. Two angels, yeah, his father is killed right before his eyes, and then these two angels come, and they don't even like comfort him. They're just like, yeah, we gotta go.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And so I feel like it's just Will's desperate attempt, just like when he would stand his ground in his house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't really have any real power. He probably still doesn't even really have real power over these angels either, but he stands his ground. And I feel like it was a little bit like that. Like, he's posturing like, well, no, you have to do what I say, because they are insistent. I mean, they are very insistent. Mm-hmm. They don't even, I mean... And these are also the same two guys who, when he said, why, if you were following us this whole time, why didn't you stop and save my father? And he was like, well, you know, we have what we needed. So
right.
It didn't matter. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I give him a little bit of a pass on that.
That's fair. That's fair.
So you're saying that they have, because they want to take him to Azrael. They have this information that they've learned mm-hmm. about where the authority is. But they needed some credit or something to sell the information.
Well, yeah.
Just walking up to Azrael, he's not going to buy it, I guess.
Well, they're lower ranking angels.
They're nobody.
Which is one of the reasons you can't see them, which I find very interesting. You know, they're mm-hmm. like, well, no, you can't really see us because we're not very high ranking. So, which makes a little sense, because then, you know, in the previous books, when Serafina and Ruta Scotti, you know, those are full blown, like, you can mm-hmm. see me angels. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, oh my God, I just lost my train of thought. What were we talking about? Wow. Sorry, teacher brain. We have a final thing coming up on Thursday. And I'm like out of it.
It's Will wielding his power over them. And they're,
yeah.
Cause Will has a singular mission here. Mm-hmm. He wants to get to Lyra.
Mm-hmm.
And how he's going to do that, he still doesn't really know. He works here with the knife quite a lot. He learns so much more about the knife and what it's capable of. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting sequence about him sort of figuring out all the different layers. And he's like, how do I can only go between this world and my world. Like, how do I get to other worlds? How do I get to Lyra's or whatever? And so he starts to learn and experiment and feel his way through what the knife can do. But it doesn't get him any closer to getting to Lyra. Lyra is a physical distance away from him, not a dimensional distance away from him.
Mm-hmm.
I think at one point it's like 4,000 miles. Like, it's like not even close.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. Like, I can't go that far. I'm wondering, you know, can they pick him up? Like, is there a way for them to move? You know, at some point they even say, in order for Baruch to get to Azrael has to fly nonstop for two straight days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the distance between where they are and where they need to be is very great. So Will may feel very helpless too. How do I get back to Lyra? Where is she? How do mm-hmm. I find her? And they're like, come on, let's just go do our thing. You know, he even wishes he could consult the alethiometer. He looks at the alethiometer at one point and is like, how do I do this? And I'm like, you got to study a long time. You got to have books. And they even say that
Lyra's probably making it up.
Yeah, she's not even reading it.
That was hilarious.
And he's like, no, she's reading. I'm like, she's making it up. Yeah, that was very funny.
And I love he asked them, well, can you read it? And they're like, no. Like, you know, like, I know it's made of our essence, but no, I cannot read this, you know.
Yeah.
these
I
guys,
love that it came through.
They play very Shakespearean, these two guys. Very, you know, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like these right. funny, weird side characters that are, you know, equal parts infuriating and also amusing. And you wonder where they fall in the scheme of how they're going to help Will in this process. Mm-hmm. Even when, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but it's an interesting trio of characters that are together mm-hmm. now. Will's pragmatic and he's human and he's been launched into this, you know, insane world. And then now his two companions are these invisible angels. Like, how do you even get to how did I get here? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead. Mm. Well, I was thinking about, so they go and look, they find the camp. Right. And he's looking for he goes to look for supplies and he sees Sir Charles, a dead Sir Charles. And he basically pilfers everything he can pilfer from this area, including some mint cakes,
yeah.
which kind of sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
And then we learn that the angels apparently have to eat.
A little bit.
A very little bit.
Yeah. I felt Well, and again, to bring it back to Good Omens, I felt like it was very much like when Michael Sheen was eating, didn't have to eat. Mm-hmm. It just was good. And he wanted to like enjoy it and like kind of fit it. Like I almost wasn't even like he needed it. He was just kind of like, what's that? Like, that's interesting. Just a little bit. Like, I just want to taste it. It was just really, mm-hmm. it was kind of fun. Cause it's almost like, especially for that particular, that angel, he's such a smartass.
Yeah.
I mean, just for sure. Like, and I love it. I mean, it's great. He's so impatient with Will and he's so just like, oh, it's like, he's so tedious. Will is so tedious to him. Mm-hmm. But then he was like, oh, can I just have like a nosh on that? Just a little bit. And it was cute.
Like it was like a tiny square of it.
Yeah. It was enough. He's watching his figure.
Yeah.
I guess he's the only one who can.
Yeah.
So how do humans become angels?
Don't know. They intentionally cut that off.
Yeah. I guess we'll find out how this happens. It's a kind of a big piece of information that would be of interest, but yeah, we're sort of left grasping at straws here about how that might happen.
Oh yeah. If I was a cartoon character right now, I'd have like that straight eyebrow. That's just like, because I was like, why are you not telling me this right now? And it was such a non-answer. It was such an evasive, like, we need to get going. Like, we're wasting time. And I'm like, you're wasting my time. Yep. Like, oh, just
walk and talk.
I know. I was like, come on. Exactly. You know, every other freaking place, it's exposition. And I'm like, yes. You can't tell me. Oh, he better.
Yeah. He's got to be saving it.
I think there are two explanations here, though. Just based on, you know, following Pullman on Twitter, either there's no explanation for this, and he's just like, oh, yeah, it's a thing that happens. Let's move on quickly. Or it's something that we're going to see as a big deal later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if it's the first one, I'm writing a strongly worded letter. Dear sir.
To yes. whom it may concern.
type. I'll look like Kermit, you know, that meme, like when he's typing on the typewriter. He's like,
that'll and be Philip me. Pullman will be Kermit with the T.
That's right. Like, he's dark Kermit at this point.
Oh, yeah, with the robe.
Me.
Yeah.
It's very yeah. unfair.
That's good.
Pullman liked something that we tweeted, guys.
He did.
This is an aside.
That is so cool.
He, like, someone asked, like, had a follow up on one of our tweets, and then he responded to it.
And it was pretty amazing.
Just
yeah. to see at the Ember Spy Cast, Philip Pullman.
Boom, Philip Pullman. Yeah, pretty just great. We should screenshot that. Attention. We need to save that.
I have screenshot.
Yeah. We need to do that. So let's talk a little about exploring what the subtle knife can do. I touched on it a little bit, but each world has a very different feel.
Yeah.
And Will, he's probably not going to learn how they all feel, but he starts to learn things and specifics about the distance between Travis, you were big on this in the last book about where you are elevation wise, right, and how important it is to know where you're cutting through based on where other worlds' ground is, basically.
Yep.
And that's something that it's like number one on his list to figure out. Oh, yeah. Because he's sort of cutting through and looking at other places, but he's like, oh, I'm like in the, you know, in the sky, you know, this isn't really going to work.
It's so the mountains here. It's the sky on this world.
Yes. And without having to physically move through this world to get to a lower place, he needs to find a way to get to other worlds that are on the same level. So he feels the way they catch and the way they feel and the way they enter his hand can kind of feel how the knife is interacting with the, how he's cutting. And he kind of figures it out. Takes some time. I don't know how long he really took doing it, but he's kind of a natural and his hand is feeling so much better. Thank you so much, Dad.
Yes. No more bleeding. It feels better.
It was like a, you know, it's like what Han Solo said. He's like, instead of a big dark blur, I see a big light blur. You know, it's like, it's better. You know, it's better. It's nice. Still hurts, but it's not that kind of excruciating pain.
I love the way that Pullman describes how Will feels the difference, because he's feeling like he's literally like feeling a difference. And I thought, well, how many different ways can that feel? You know, like I'm thinking like, does one feel scratchy or one feel whatever? And I just love the way he describes it, because at some point, in the text he says, I just lost it. Oh no.
You're talking about the one where it says this one was hard and definite, that one cloudy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It was so neat. And like that, this one had a resonance and this one was slippery. Mm-hmm. And this one was, you know, and like, and it's such a cool. And so whatever it was about Will's world, that feeling, he knew it was his.
Yeah.
It, you know, almost makes me think of like, or feel like when you have that, like there's that one smell that like can take you, that feels like home. And you know, like if you smell it, you're taken back to that place, like in Ratatouille, like woof, right back to your, at your table and eating that. And I feel like it's kind of like that a little bit, and kind of like using the Force.
Sure. Oh yeah, sure.
And I think it's all those things, right?
It's all those things. And him knowing how to get back too. And once he goes through, he has to say, okay, how do I get back to that one? I need to feel what that one feels like, because I need to be able to get to that one's an important one. I need to remember that one. Mm-hmm. All these other ones, you know, it's interesting that he can go to them, but he really needs to know right now, three of them. He feels like he's got a real narrow list here, including the one that they sort of, well, we'll get to that.
So does that mean that everywhere in any, if you were taking like cubic square feet or inches of things, that there's a notch for every, do you know what I'm saying? Like if I'm standing here, so like just there's
an infinite number of universes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But of little snags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he has to go ahead.
He has to extend his feeling to the tip of the knife. You know, that's it's not so much about just cutting. He's got to it is the Force. He's feeling through this device. He's able to sort of connect with those snags and be able to open them up. Well, he's gifted.
Yeah, and duh, because alethiometer and feeling the meaning, and I didn't just read two books, so whatever. And, yeah, that, you know, just hit me now.
He even references how she had helped him with the knife by telling him how to sort of clear his head and calm and you know, get into almost a zen-like state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
Mindfulness, man. Mindfulness meditation to use these things. That's kind of awesome.
So you touched on the love that these angels feel for each other. Baruch comes back, and it's sort of the intensity of their friendship and their love is overwhelming, and maybe a little bit overwhelming to Will, to see that kind of connection between these two angels.
When has Will ever seen that connection between anyone before?
It's the most he's ever seen.
Yeah.
They rely on each other in a way emotionally and physically. And, when Baruch is away from Balthamos, it's like half of him is missing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, when you send your kid to school, it's like part of the first time you send a kid to school, it's like you take a little chunk of yourself and it just leaves you. And you're like kind of, it's like something like that, where there's something completely separated from them that they have to get back.
Yeah, it's almost like they're each other's demon.
Mm. Mm. Good. Yeah, good one, especially since Balthamos is going to have to turn into a bird in a minute.
Yeah.
And not going to be happy about it.
He is not. He says, oh, how tedious.
It's just so humiliating. He's like,
yeah, basic.
Yeah, basic. Yeah, basic. Oh, God. So their love is very intense, and it's amazing. They are... Will does not heed their warnings when they realize that they are being, they've been discovered.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times Balthamos says, Will, please cut through so we can get away. And Will just does not do it. He's almost entranced by what he's seeing above them, this vessel that is above them. And then he sees another angel attacking, and it's just overwhelming to him. He knows that the knife can do damage, and he decides to join the fight instead of helping escape, really. He starts to fight and slash and cut at this other angel, who Balthamos and Baruch are trying to keep quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, he catches a glimpse, and they're literally holding his mouth closed. Mm-hmm. It's like, why are they doing that? And sure enough, as soon as he gets free, he starts yelling to the regent that he's found them.
To Megatron.
And it's like, oh, no. This is bad.
Yeah.
And sure enough, Megatron, here he comes. And terrifying.
Yeah.
This is one of those, like, heart in your throat kind of moments, you know. But before Megatron gets to him, which I assume Megatron is very high in the sky, I don't know if you want to really talk about this long exposition about what...
The authority is?
Yes.
Yes.
Is this a good time to talk about that before Megatron attacks?
I think so. Let's pause before we get to Megatron.
So the authority is an angel, essentially,
mm-hmm.
who was formed of dust and was the first to be formed. Claims that they created everything to all those who came after him.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe him, and he lords that over them enough to where he is identified as the creator in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
This is Pullman's big idea. You know, we're getting it two barrels in our face. This is it. This is that chunk of exposition that we had known was coming, the big important piece. Now that we're reading it and you're hearing it and it's going into your system, how does it feel to hear that what he's talking about and what the authority is and what his idea of heaven and God and the all-powerful angels, creators?
I mean, essentially, he's saying God is the first liar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, and so it's a bit of a, it's a smack in the face, I think, to anybody who is really fully, you know, I don't want to say faithful, but who has a really intense belief, because it's saying everything that you believe is built on a lie. Everything you think is sacred, everything that you think is holy, everything that you think is good, is based on a lie. None mm-hmm. of it's good. It was self-serving and it was selfish. And so I think that's a really, that's a big message. You know, I mean, it's a huge message. And the way he said it, you know, I think there were lots of different ways he could have maybe presented it. But as, you know, as we learn here, the reason he's sending Metatron, you said Metatron.
I said Metatron. It could be Metatron.
I think it's
Metatron.
Metatron?
Late Megatron. I'm going to keep saying that. Yeah.
I know, because I'm pretty sure I wrote Optimus Prime in my notes.
You did.
Yes. But, you know, that's because he's so old. He's so old that it's now his lord, like he's the Lord Regent is now Metatron.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and it goes against any sense that God would age.
Right.
You know what I mean? That there would be, that he would be an infinite being, would be finite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Like, I read this and didn't, like, I feel like this goes beyond the atheism label that people, you know, put on Pullman a lot. And it felt like, you know, just straight up, I learned this term fairly recently, mesotheism, like hatred of God, almost like God exists and he's horrible for you. Mm. Reminds me a little bit of a speech that Stephen Fry gave a bunch of years ago that I saw on YouTube, where he talked about, and it wasn't a speech, it was an interview. He talked about what he would do or what he would say if he ever met God, if God were real and he met God. And basically he said he would talk, you know, confront him about all of the horrible things that he's done and how he's clearly a sociopath, all these things. And reading reading this particular passage, I got the same kind of feel from Pullman, you know, with regards to what seems to be his belief in God. Not so much that he doesn't believe in God, that he in fact thinks he's malignant. It was heavy. It was really a heavy passage.
It's the God problem. This is one of those things that is discussed about, is if God is all powerful and can do anything, then why does he or she or it allow so many bad things to happen? Mm-hmm. You know, it's God's plan. You know, we hear this all the time. This was the God problem in Watchmen with Dr. Manhattan. Mm-hmm. He, you know, what does Hood of Justice say at the end of the finale of the show?
He says, if he
could have done all those things, he could have done more. Uh-huh. And it is. It's like, if you're all powerful, what do you do with that power? And, you know, I think what we're seeing here is they're just bored and vindictive. And this is his idea, but it's not, this is a fantasy novel. This isn't reality. But he's saying that it's not a good look based on what's going on down here on Earth.
Uh-huh.
And all these other universes and what's happening, what is being allowed to happen. And the magisterium in particular, what they're doing and what they're being allowed to do in their name.
Mm-hmm. You know, also, I look at the other angel and how that angel is a woman. And it, you know, takes me back to the Adam and Eve story, the, you know, Pandora's box, all those other things. And this is a woman who was, you know, more wise than God. Or in this case, the authority. And she, in all those other stories, it's always about a woman who gets knowledge that, you know, entities lower on the food chain than God mm-hmm. shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's the weakness of women. It's the flaw of a woman to be that foolish, to be that naive, to be that easily, you know, fooled.
Right.
Yeah.
And I read this and I think, did the authority create those stories because of this angel? You know, is she, you know, Satan and Eve and Pandora? It's really interesting to me.
Would she
get a little heavy?
Would she be Lilith?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the idea like that Lilith was before, right?
Uh-huh.
Like they did, Lilith was before mm-hmm. Adam and Eve, yeah. And she was kind of cast out. Like maybe that's what he's playing off of here, is that she's that Lilith figure in this version of his, you know, in this version of the story.
And mm-hmm. then what we know Lyra's role is in this, about being Eve.
Right.
And how important that is and how that's supposed to play out.
Mm-hmm.
Or if Eve is, you know, also this archetype that goes for forbidden knowledge, maybe rather than, you know, what we were initially thinking were, you know, Lyra is going to be the first woman in this new world. Maybe that's the that's the role Lyra is supposed to have. Lyra is supposed to unlock this new knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is certainly more in keeping with the character than, you know, to be the mother of the world.
You know, and she's already she's already aware of something now in her dream state that feels important, and as her role is in this, about being aware of the land of the dead,
mm-hmm.
and what it really is. Because part of this exposition is also when people die, they go to the land of the dead. People are told they go to heaven, but in fact, he just throws them in this realm, an unpleasant realm, a gray and sad place.
Don't they call it something like a prison camp?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can I read it real quick? It's a great little bit. Yeah. It says, you know, why were they here? They were imprisoned. Someone had committed a crime, though no one knew what it was or who had done it or what mm-hmm. authority sat in judgment. So they're just there. Mm-hmm. And then Roger says, which is even more heartbreaking, he's like, I don't know. I'm here forever. I don't know. Did I do bad things? I don't know. I tried to be good, but I hate it and I'm scared. And it's like, you know, and it plays on that whole idea that if you're good enough, you know, mm-hmm. that's the whole idea of heaven, right? If you're good mm-hmm. enough, you'll go ahead and you'll ascend or you'll make the cut. Calvinists, just kidding. but
oh, that's Lutheran.
That is 601. But I lost my train of thought again. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. But yeah, I feel like it's like, you know, it's that whole thing. Like, you know, I thought I was good enough, and really, it's not a place where good people go. It's a prison camp. You're just coming here now for, I guess, to serve me in mm-hmm. the afterlife.
Yes. And this is another lie. It's another big lie mm-hmm. that terrestrial beings are told. And countless millions of people are just there mm-hmm. with no way out and nowhere to go. Although some do apparently become angels.
Right.
Which we don't know why
or how. We have no idea how.
Pullman!
I wonder, though, if that's where, like, the dead of all the universes go. And you can run into, like, the other versions of yourself on this world.
Hmm.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So, any more we want to touch on about this exposition?
No, about this.
So, back to Metatron and his death spiral coming down to try to get to them. They kill this angel. This angel gets killed and just dissipates into like a mist, like an ethereal mist, less like a dusting and more just a disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a flesh. They're different.
They're dust.
They're just dust. So Metatron is rapidly approaching and will finally kind of snaps out of it as soon as this angel dies and cuts through to the first place he can find that seems reasonable, which is kind of a beach. Mm-hmm. They jump through, and it was so wild as he's closing it, he feels the gust of wind from Metatron reaching his point where they were seconds before he closes the gate.
He felt like the after image between universes. That's crazy.
Yeah. Metatron's kind of pissed. And if he wants to get Will so badly, he knows that Will is important in this tale. And maybe this is why, going back to Mrs. Coulter, maybe she has some awareness about Metatron and or what people would do to Lyra if they could get a hold of her from the authorities' army. She's very protective of Lyra. There's no question.
Yes.
She didn't want her to get cut. She didn't want her to get incised.
And it's certainly not just class. You know, like you belong to a different class than these other people. It's deeper than that.
Yes.
I mean, for however twisted or, you know, whatever Mrs. Coulter is, Lyra is still her daughter. Mm-hmm. That has to mean something.
Of course.
You know, that has to mean something. And so I can imagine even in whatever, you know, totally wrong way she's feeling it, she's still mm-hmm. feeling it. And mm-hmm. she feels like this is the best way to keep her safe, which is totally incapacitating and imprisoning her.
Right.
You know, out of love. Ish.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
And how long is that sustainable? How long do you think we get into this book before Lyra is free of this? You know, how long can this be sustained?
I mean, if we think back to the beginning of that first prologue / chapter, the monkey was very agitated in the cave.
Yes.
Which I think was its own, that was its own response. I don't think it was necessarily mirroring anything about Mrs. Coulter. I think Mrs. Coulter is content to stay there as long as she needs to keep Lyra where she wants her and has mm-hmm. her and can control her and protect her or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the monkey was like pacing. Like that very first description is talking about how the monkey's kind of pacing in the doorway, in the dark doorway. Mm-hmm. And then you realize it's the monkey and it's very menacing. I feel like, and I don't know, I seriously don't, I know I read this book before. I do not remember it at all. So this is like brand new for me again. Yeah. But I feel like if anything were to happen, it would have to be the monkey's doing. Like, I don't feel like Mrs. Coulter would slip up and not be giving her unless she runs out of it mm-hmm. or something, you know, catastrophic like that happens. Maybe the monkey's like, dumps the rest out. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Or she has to go on the move, you know, or she has mm-hmm. to go
or she's discovered. True.
Yeah. And she's got to like wake her up and we got to get out of here. You know, that could be part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned here in your notes, which I thought was really great, was you referenced A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Dream Warriors. Can Lyra in her dream state affect change in the Land of the Dead? Like they can in that film.
I mean, number one, you weren't supposed to read that out loud.
We're all about references here. It was for you. It's a good reference.
But I just kept thinking, because she's talking to Roger, and I don't feel like it's...
Not a dream.
A dream. And I don't feel like, you know, I feel like it's just what happened when Stanislav Grumman / John Parry, like, showed Lee like what he was doing kind of like with the airships.
Yes.
And I feel like it's that same kind of a vision because it's real. And I think that that's part of the reason too. Like Lyra is always so restless. You know, she's always very restless in her sleep. Cause I think it's affecting her that way. But that's why I wrote that. Cause I was like,
but it's legit. No, I mean, it's absolutely true.
Yeah. I mean, is really more substantial than the other in the Land of the Dead? I mean, I would think that she would be able to affect change just as much as Roger would or anyone else would. Perhaps more so in so much as she still has her a bit more of her wits about her. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and she's not dead. I can't remember the name of the myth now. What is it when they go down? He goes down to get – oh, my gosh – it's not to rescue Persephone, is it? I can't remember now. But, you know, he goes into the Land of the Dead,
uh-huh.
but he's not dead. And so he has a little more agency than the people that are there and have to. So, like, and perhaps that's why she can do it. Maybe the sleeping potion is keeping her in a state that's close mm-hmm. enough that she sort of can, you know.
But it makes me think that, like, if she's there in this dream state, that there are someone is running the Land of the Dead. They're not just wandering around down there without mm-hmm. somebody in charge, right?
Right.
And they must be aware that there's someone who is not dead who's there. Like when John Constantine goes to hell, they want to keep him there. Like they don't want him to leave again. You know, mm-hmm. it's like they are aware that he's there and they're aware he's not supposed to be there. So I wonder if the longer she's there, the closer they get to finding her.
Mm.
Or can other people see him? Can other people there see her? Roger can see her, but is she just? Yeah, I don't know. We're gonna find out. You know,
we sure are.
So the angels, Will kind of convinces them that they need to, you know, they want to take him to give this information to Azrael, which again, we don't even need to get into Azrael right now, but the fact that Azrael is controlling this big army and like, it's, we still just, that's a suspension of disbelief. Like how the hell did he do that? But so they're going to split up and information is going to be given to Lord Azrael, and Balthamos is going to stay with Will and continue on this journey. It's going to take him a couple days to get to Azrael. So now we're going to be the two of these, the angel and the kid are going to be on an adventure together here at the end. And this is sort of how it ends here. They part ways. Balthamos is going to have to turn into a bird, but only if he absolutely has to.
So tedious.
And you know, he apologizes to Will here for being curt and for being kind of a pill. He says sorry.
He does.
He says so. He's contrite.
I don't act that way anymore.
It's pretty exciting. This is I don't know. It's exciting to get back into it.
It is exciting to get back into it. And, you know, going back to what we talked about in the very beginning, when we were talking about Pullman's description, I love being able to paint the world in my head. Mm-hmm. As much fun as it was, like Joanna was saying, to be spoon-fed the world, it's nice to build it on our own. Because now with what I feel like between the movie and the TV series and our own imaginations, it's really nice to have all these building blocks for our own version of what the ideal His Dark Materials looks like.
Mm-hmm. Let me spit this prose at you because it's so good. Stuff like this is why we're reading this. Behind him, there were other figures, even more shadowy than he was, even more silent. They seemed to be of the same company and of the same kind, but they had no faces that were visible and no voices that spoke. And his voice never rose above a whisper, and his face was shaded and blurred like something half forgotten. If I could write 1/10 that good, I would be so happy.
Try to replicate that on a cheap set, BBC.
You're going to ruin our chances of anything.
We're never going to get free stuff.
No, we're never going to get swag. Oh. We're never going to get an interview.
I love that show. I do. I would rewatch it. Yeah, I would rewatch it. I really would. It's not that.
I feel like I need to rewatch it.
Yeah.
But I like it. I mean, how much did I love the Egyptians and everything?
Great. Absolutely right.
I just don't like sets. That's me.
You know, they got picked up. Maybe there's an excitement and a buzz and they add a couple more bucks to it. There's no way they're going to pull off the Amber Spyglass without throwing significant ducats at it. It just isn't. There's no way to do it.
And if I have to donate money, if I have to pay the British licensing fee in order to get
Travis, you're already giving them $16 a month for your HBO subscription.
I already am.
They can parlay that into, you know, a hat. another Lee hat.
Lord Fogg gets a whole new hat out of
it. It's amazing that we're going to see Urich again. You know, where there's so many characters that I'm so anxious to see. And
yes.
And this is a beefy book. This is the longest of the three. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 540 pages. Does that sound right? 540 pages?
Something like that.
It's beefy. You know what? So happy to be back with you two. We took a 2-week hiatus and it felt like an eternity. And we're back to reading, which is a real thrill. And I'm just very pleased to be recording again and talking to everybody out there in the world.
Yes. We're going to get 19 episodes out of this.
Yeah.
We're getting 19
this book
out of this book.
Uh-huh.
Holy finoli. Are you serious?
Yes. Yep.
Good Lord. And we're doing it 2 chapters at a time.
Yeah.
So we'll do 3 and 4 next week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, folks need to just buckle in. We're going to have some fun.
I mean, this is only 30 pages and we spent 1 hour and 10 minutes on, there's so much, it's not just the exposition. It's like the new characters and the relationships and trying to unpack where we are going in this story, because now things are starting. It's not that things are being tied up, but we're really, the threads are starting to become more visible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of discussion to be had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, many blessings to you guys. Travis and Joanna, are your dark materialists? Please visit us on Facebook and on the web, where we have a lovely little website for you to look at theamberspycast.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter. So give us a shout out, say hello, give us a review on iTunes or YouTube, and thank you for those who already have. Let's keep at it. 19 episodes, son.
Yeah. Woo. A playlist is going to be long.
I'm saying, and we got Secret Commonwealth, Book of Dust, La Belle Sauvage. You know,
season
if we're going to get in, we got a lot of work to do.
Oh boy. Woo-hoo. I'm all here, right, kiddos, for it.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
See you later.